From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. It's the final international break of the season. Are you wavering over that wild card or chomping to use those chips? Plenty of Strat Chat in this week's official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Hello everyone, happy international break. We hope you're using your time wisely, keeping tabs on your FPL players in international action and of course preparing for the final eight, yes, just eight game weeks of the season. There is so much for us to look ahead to, and joining me to do just that, it's broadcaster Ian Irving, who is creeping up on me in the FPL ranks.
Not quite as lippy as you were, Kelly, are you?
I'm going to keep very quiet today. I've had a terrible few weeks. Pleased to say you guys haven't. Journalist Lars Stevenson also joins us. Morning, Lars.
Good morning, Kelly. How's it going?
Yes, not too bad, thank you. A bit gussed to have Ian on the pod, but what can you do? And finally, it's FPL Black Boxes, Az Phillips. Az, where are you in the world now? Because this is getting more and more remarkable week on week.
Up to 555 now, which is nice. So nicely settled in the top 1K. But as Ian pointed out to me just before we came on, I went up one place this week and didn't get that grey arrow, which I've always wanted.
Well, the top 500 is not a bad place to be. And you survived game week 30 without using a chip, as did all of our panel. But 838,000 managers did free hit last week with just four fixtures taking place due to the FA Cup quarterfinals. So let's take a look back at them and see how they impacted all of our panel and their ranks. Well, the game week certainly got off to a bang, didn't it? With Leeds coming back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 at Wolves on Friday night. Many managers will have had at least one Wolves defender, Raul Jimenez, and maybe also Rafinha, who missed out with COVID. Now, Ian, you missed out on the Brazilian, but you didn't have any Wolves defenders, which turned out to be quite lucky. But it wasn't really the start to the game week that we were expecting, was it?
No, it wasn't. And slight spoiler alert ahead of the Arsenal chat, I also owned Aaron Ramsdale and Gabriel Martinelli. So in a week where you needed all your players to turn up, three of mine didn't. I'd also had the Luca Dean injury just before it as well. So the original plan of having 10 players for this game week ended up being spoiled a little bit. Rafinha was a blow because I can't remember many times this season where we've had players being ruled out post press conferences, and I've certainly not had a situation where I've had three players who've been ruled out. The rumours started on Twitter, didn't they, about Rafinha. I hope they weren't true. They were true, and when you see that Leeds scored three times, it makes it even more gutting, to be honest, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. When Leeds score three times, you normally think that there's going to be some form of Rafinha involvement, but alas, he was out for that one. As you just said there, a bit of a spoiler from Ian, Arsenal beat Aston Villa by 1-0, but a mixed affair. Bukayo Saka on target, getting 11 points, but Aaron Ramsdale missed out with a hip injury. All of our panel had him, and Lars, you even brought him in.
Yeah, no, the pity in your voice, I think, is well earned. I've spent most of the week in a sort of fetal position trying to sort of recover from this game week. I planned towards this with the idea of using a free hit. So I hadn't really made sure and made the moves to make sure I had a lot of players. And then when I was tinkering with my free hit, I just thought about, you know what? There are not that many players that look promising for this. So I just decided to risk it and took a -4 instead to bring in some more players who would play. One of which was Aaron Ramsdale, so that didn't work out very well. In the end, I had very few players. But, I mean, I'm going to defend my strategy all the same, even though it clearly didn't work, is that a decision to not free hit in this game week is clearly just part one of two, because it does mean I'll have a free hit later on when it's needed. So the hope is that I can claw back enough points when I do deploy my free hit to make this catastrophe feel worth it.
Yeah, as you're someone that's talked a lot, I've seen on social media and podcasts about the upside of free hitting on weeks, not for blank game weeks, but for double game weeks. You did it a couple of game weeks ago as well. So would you offer Lars some comfort about that, some words of comfort that maybe he did do the right thing in saving that chip?
Yeah, I mean, I do like a free hit in a blank in some cases, because you kind of guarantee yourself extra points. If Lars had done it, for example, he would have got more points in the 30 he got. And there's always a chance if you use it in a double, you could end up with less, because you've got players you take out. I took out, when I free hitted a few weeks ago, for example, I took out the likes of Trent, Saka, and those guys delivered. I just got fortunate the players I bought in outscored them. So the comfort I'll offer to Lars is I got 70 points on my team when I free hitted. So it's definitely possible to make massive gains. There's some really nice doubles coming. You know, City have got a double game week that's going to be dropped in at some point between now and the end of the season. So you can load up on their players when other people might be struggling. So all is not lost.
There Yay. We go. That's exactly what you wanted to hear on this Thursday morning, Lars. Is it?
Let's... Yeah, well, I mean, I guess just looking at it from a point of maths, in terms of how many more extra games you get in on your team, then logically, if you do it right, you should have like more extra games active on your team with the free hit than with a couple of extra playing guys on a blank week, is what I'm thinking. But ask me again in a few weeks if this worked out or not.
It's interesting, though, because... You know, a common play in previous years has been to play free hit in a blank game week. And to do it this week as well, I saw a couple of scores around the 80 mark, which is 40 points up on what I scored for the week, which was 43. So actually, if I'd done that and got 40 additional points, I probably would have been... I know it's not 70 as before you chime in, by the way. That is exceptional. Well done. But to get 40 points extra with a chip, I think is pretty good going, to be fair. So in my head now, when I do play my free hit, I'm going to be looking at around that sort of mark, because if I don't hit that, to me it'll feel like a failure considering the opportunities that were around this week.
I think the difference is that on this blank game week, it was all centered around sort of four or five key players, so like Saka, Son, Kane, and then like Madison, and then it was hard to find any other players who kind of got into the double digit mark, whereas in a double game week there could be double, triple the amount of players that hit those scores, and then you've got more chance of getting in on it. So if you free hitted this week and nailed those players, which I think a lot of people did because there wasn't much choice to go for, then you were kind of laughing. But I still think you're in a good position if you've got that free hit between now and the end of the season to use.
Thank you. I feel better now.
That's what we're here for, Lars, to make you feel better.
Yay.
Let's continue our rundown of what happened at the weekend then. Sunday saw two more games, Leicester beating Brentford by 2-1. Timothy Castagna and James Maddison on target, whilst the most transferred in player of the game week, Ivan Toney, blanks. Now, you may not have had him as, but Harvey Barnes, who got an assist, was your transfer in. So yet another successful move from you.
Yeah, I took out Anthony Gordon, who Everton have been pretty rubbish, but Gordon's really, really impressed me. And I know he's got the double coming up in 31. So it was a little bit of a reluctant move to kind of take him out. But Leicester have been improving. And I thought of all the fixtures, you know, last week, I thought this Leicester-Brentford game had the biggest potential for a big score. It was really disappointing though, because I had Amarte as well, who lost the clean sheet kind of in the last few minutes. And I'm just a bit worried about Leicester defensive assets going forward, because we just don't know who's going to play. Evans was on the bench, Fofana's back. You've got Pereira, Justin, you know, even Vestergaard's knocking around. So it's really hard to know who's going to line up each week. But Barnes and Maddison, I think, look really strong options between now and the end of the season. Maddison's had these kind of persistent injuries, which was why I didn't go for him with the transfer, even though I rate him so highly. So yeah, it was Barnes who's been in great form, and another attacking return from him. So hopefully a few more between now and the end of the season.
I hope so too, because I transferred him in as well. And finally, Spurs beat West Ham 3-1. Three assists for Harry Kane, but Son Heung-min outscored him with 2 goals. So well done, Ian. The only one brave enough to give the armband to him.
And stupid enough not to own Kane. Yeah.
That was what I was going to say. Was it scary going into last week without him?
It's been scary every single week without him. It's my top priority. I need Harry Kane. But also, what I've done as well, not only have I been stupid enough to not own him, I've been stupid enough to get myself 3 Spurs assets. So I now have to work out who I'm taking out to then bring Kane in, which is obviously an additional transfer as well. I've boxed myself in with Saka as well. I don't own him either, which is also pretty dumb. And I've got 3 Arsenal players, none of whom are Saka. So I've got myself 2 big conundrums that I've just sort of found myself in. I've got no wild card to sort it out. And I'm worried week on week exactly what I'm going to do here, because I want both of those players. I should own both of those players. And I don't own them. So I've got to work out.
Panic in your voice, Ian.
Yeah. And I'm normally someone who goes for obvious players, I have to say. So, you know, this is not a planned maverick move not to own Kane and Saka. It's just sort of happened like this from circumstance. And rather than seeing the bigger picture, I've been too focused on game week to game week, and I've got myself in this mess. So big points here incoming at some point to try and undo it, I think, because sometimes I think you just have to admit you're wrong. And if it costs you 4 points to reverse it, fair enough, because I think Kane and Saka will repay that hit between now and the end of the season. The only issue with it is the fact that everyone else already has them. So you're essentially giving everyone else a minus eight start. So, yeah.
Do you know what? Had you been a little bit nicer to me at the top of the podcast, I might have a bit of sympathy, but unfortunately...
No, none of that. It's my own fault. It's my team.
You fist pumped when he said he was taking a big hit, Kelly. I saw you.
No, I didn't. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? Quick update on our mini league now. It's another week at the top for the winning 11, but hot on their heels is Soldier of Sondre, who scored 74 points in game week 30 and moved up to second place. To join our mini league, the code is 1KIKS7. Okay, well, that's game week 30 done and dusted, but with an average score of just 28 points. See, Lars, you were above average. It's time now to find out how we can improve on that over the next few weeks as we map out the run-in. So there are just 8 game weeks to go in FPL, and there are some big ones over the next few weeks that we now have confirmation about. There are 2 double game weeks in the next 3, a small double game week in 31 when Burnley and Everton play twice, and then a bigger one in double game week 33. And following the FA Cup quarterfinals last weekend, we now know that 7 teams will double in 33. They are Burnley, Leicester, Arsenal, Manchester United, Southampton, Brighton and Newcastle. But be warned that Aston Villa, Leeds and Wolves all blank in game week 33. Firstly, Az, that's quite a lot for us to process. What are your thoughts on what you're going to do with your team? How does that affect your planning for the next few weeks?
Yeah, I think normally when we get these doubles coming in, our first instinct is just to get really excited because we think, oh, we're going to load our teams up with all these exciting double game week players. We're going to hit 100 plus points and everything's going to be great. And I look at the double in 31 and I think that is probably the most... that's got all the markers of the most disappointing double ever. It's 2 teams that are really struggling at the moment. I mean, since January, Burnley have got sort of the second to bottom attacking stats in the league, creating a chance every 10.4 minutes. Only Norwich is worse than that. Everton aren't that much better. A chance every 8.6 minutes. They're about sort of 16th on the table. So attacking wise, who do you get in from those players? And then you look at the defensive numbers as well, and I don't really back either of those teams to keep many clean sheets. I haven't been doing it at all, really. So I'm probably just going to avoid that game week altogether. I think Anthony Gordon, as I said, I sold him. He's probably the only one that I'd consider from Everton. And then looking at Burnley, I mean, maybe Weghorst, but that's only because the striking options are so poor. So I'm kind of just writing that one off. And then you go into 33 and I look at the games again and I think, well, Arsenal are a good team, and United, you know, they could perform, but... You know, United have got that Norwich game, but then Liverpool, Arsenal have got Southampton, then Chelsea. So 2 tough games for them. Leicester have got Newcastle, Everton, but then there's going to be rotation because they're in the Europa League. And I can't get excited about that game week either. So probably just going to try and avoid them for the most part. If I can get into 33 with kind of 7-ish players, I'll probably just take that.
Ian, you were nodding your head as Az was saying that. We all have double game week excitement, don't we? Has Az just tempered your excitement a little bit?
Yes, and it was already tempered, if I'm honest. No, because of the reasons that Az just explained, to be fair. And, you know, when the doubles first start happening, we're all captaining Josh King and Emmanuel Dennis, aren't we? And then reality hits and one of the captains ends up with minus points, and you sort of realise that maybe you shouldn't get too carried away with the doubles. Like Az says, 31 is a hard sell, to be honest. Even without Weghorst, the last time we were on, Duncan Alexander was giving him all sorts of wonderful nicknames, and I think I called him the Vegasaurus, maybe.
You did.
but he's essentially gone extinct, hasn't he, over the last few weeks. So
very good. Very good.
Are you saying even that you're no longer a member of the Wu-Tang Clan?
There you go.
Oh, gosh.
It's getting better. I am still a member and I've still got a little bit of faith, but that's more because of the fact that they've got so many matches left and they're playing for something as well. We're getting to the point of the season where you want to bring in players who have got genuine targets to go for, and Burnley, of course, battling for survival, need points, need goals, and you'd think that Weghorst would be involved. He's got a 60% goal involvement since he arrived at Turf Moor. It's just a shame there's not been many goals. They've not scored for 3 games, so I'm not sure that I'm really selling this player, but I guess you just keep him if you've got him. And if you haven't got him, I don't think he's someone that you're desperate to get in, but he might be someone who could bring some upside in these doubles, because like Az says, the attacking options at the minute, we're not exactly blessed with loads of choice, really.
Yeah, I should also tell you at this point that if we look at the long view, which I know we normally do a little bit later in the podcast, Burnley are actually top of that. After them, it goes Leicester, Arsenal, Manchester United, and then Southampton. If you do want to check out the full fixture difficulty rating, it's available at premierleague.com. The one other thing we've got to be mindful of is that we will, of course, have more doubles later in the season because there are teams blanking that will need fixtures rearranged. And Liverpool, Manchester City and Chelsea's games in 33, they were, of course, going to have a double until they made it into the FA Cup semi-finals. What are you thinking chip-wise, Lars? What are your plans? You've got a wild card and a free hit left, I believe.
Yeah. And that's what makes it interesting, really, because when you initially, I did definitely have the free hit penciled in for 31. But just with the postponements because the FA Cup semis, and it's just sort of, again, you're sat in the situation when you're looking at what your free hit team would be. No longer as excited about it as I was going to be. So we might actually do the opposite of what I was planning again and just make a few moves in the next two double game weeks to make sure I'm in a good position for it and save the free hit. Even like it's gonna, you know, save it yet again. I might do that. Well, it's a bad thing to say in a strategy chat, but I'm gonna have to wait and see a little bit here.
As it's now a good time for managers to wildcard if they still have their second wildcard left.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is probably the time that I'd be looking to do it. It depends how your team's set up, but I think there's teams that you can target here. Chelsea have got an unbelievable run between now and the end of the season. You know, if we get news that Reece James is back from injury, you know, you always play it safer and go for Rudiger. You've got the midfielders there as well. Plenty of options. You've got Leicester to tap into. They've got a good fixture run, some other fixtures to be rearranged. You're getting some City players, some Liverpool players. There's plenty of kind of options. All the other alternatives, you save it and you use it in the last kind of few weeks. As I said, City have got this double game week to be rearranged. They've got really good fixtures between now and the end of the season. So you know they're going to get a good double at some point. The only thing with the wildcard is the longer you leave it, the less opportunity you have to benefit from it. And it's the most powerful chip that we have. So I think if your team needs it and, you know, there's no real upside to saving it if you're going to make six or seven transfers. But if your team's in fairly good shape, then you can probably wait a few more weeks.
It might be that the strat for me is to, for the next two game weeks, make subs to set myself up for 33 and then wildcard immediately after that, just accepting that I'm moving to a slightly weird team structure. And that does leave me the free hit to do something wacky towards the end of the season when the opportunity arises with all these postponed games.
You're pretty much guaranteeing yourself, you know, three green arrows at the end of the season if you do that. If you wildcard, then you free hit. You know, you're going to have a pretty decent rank rise unless you really mess it up.
Hello.
I do really like that strategy as well. You don't want to kind of accept that you're going to have a load of reds before you go into that. If your team isn't set up well enough for the next few weeks, then I think this is still the best time to use it.
You know, in the past, we've had panelists that have live pressed buttons on this podcast. We've had people activate wildcards. We've had people activate free hits. I think Ian tried to do it the other week, and then we decided it made terrible audio.
I think it got edited out in the end.
Yes, it did. But you did activate a chip on the podcast, didn't you, or just after?
Yes, I did, yeah. Yeah, I activated my free hit, yeah.
I think, from what Az has just said there, we're going to have a first presenter activating chip by the end of the podcast, or as soon as
wild
we're
card
off.
Klaxon.
Yeah, I think my wild card could well be activated. I'm sure I won't be the only person pressing that button this week, and hopefully our next section where we check in on each position will help you out. Okay, let's start between the sticks with the goalkeepers then. And we really have to start with the fact that the most owned goalkeeper in the game, Aaron Ramsdale, has a hip injury. He missed the Aston Villa game, as we said. Lars, what do we do now?
Well, my first instinct is probably unbroadcastable. But since I just brought him in, it's been a while since we've had these sort of catastrophic late notice injuries. Turns out in this case, his hips did in fact lie, I guess. I mean, it's very, very frustrating. Situation. I haven't really, because we're on an international week, my instinct is to kind of wait and see a little bit because I really don't want to spend another sub, in fact, on a goalkeeper. So I'm on the wait and see with Ramsdale, to be honest.
You laugh about it, but is that the right thing to do, as do you think, just to wait and see how long this injury is? Because he is highly owned, he is brilliant when he plays, or would you be inclined to just sell him now?
Yeah, I mean, he's still the number one target for me if he's fully fit. I think he's the best goalkeeper to own to down the end of the season. I mean, Arsenal have got so much to play for that it's not a case of, you know, if he's 50-50, they'll wrap him in cotton wool and won't play him. Like, he will play. He's been so important to them this season. Leno came in and did well, but Ramsdale just offers so... His distribution's fantastic. The crucial saves he's made this season. You know, if he's 50-50, he's straight back in that side. So I think we'll know as well, sort of before the deadline this time. So I think you definitely hold. If you're on a wild card and we get news that he's out for a little while, then I think there's other options you consider, but I would definitely be holding Ramsdale if he's fit.
Let's talk about those other options then, Ian. Who stands out for you in goal other than Aaron Ramsdale?
I have to agree again with Az. I'm finding myself agreeing with the man who's 555 in the world quite a lot, which is quite a coincidence, isn't it?
That's not a bad place to be in.
In terms of alternatives, maybe Kasper Schmeichel because of the doubles that Leicester have got and their defence looks like a nightmare, to be honest, trying to pick players out, which we might talk about when we do the defensive section. And obviously, Kasper Schmeichel's guaranteed to play for them. So you are definitely taking advantage of the additional fixtures that Leicester will have. And Nick Pope is the other one that I've seen mentioned a lot, similar to Wout Weghorst, really. It's a hard sell, to be honest. Yes, he's got more games, but the clean sheets haven't been flowing for Burnley this season, apart from that little spell around the last doubles. So maybe doubles inspire Burnley, perhaps. And if they do, that would be brilliant. So we can jump on Nick Pope. But he's the 11th highest scoring goalkeeper this season. I don't think I can come on the podcast and promote the 11th highest scoring goalkeeper, to be honest.
Also, with regards to Schmeichel, I mean, Leicester are just really bad defensively. They have been all season. And maybe now with people coming back from injury, it'll get better. But we haven't really seen much of it so far in terms of sort of XG against, you know, across the season. Only Watford, Leeds United and Norwich have conceded a higher XG number. But since the 1st of January, again, it's just Norwich, Leeds and Brentford have conceded more XG against. So they're just not very good defensively, I think, even if they're a name we associate with results and stuff.
They've improved a little bit lately, but I take your point that the sort of longer... the longer data suggests that they're not really someone to back, but they have kept 3 clean sheets in the last 6 matches in all competitions. That would have been 4 if Brentford hadn't scored that late goal in the previous game week. So there's a little bit of hope there, maybe, but I just think it's really difficult to pick a defender from there as well, really. I mean, if you go with Schmeichel, fair enough. I'm just going to do it now, Kelly. It seems daft for me to wait till we get to the defensive section. I don't know who's playing right back. I don't know who's playing left back. And I don't know who's playing centre back. There you go.
So there's a bit of confusion when it comes to the Leicester defence. Just a quick word on premium goalkeepers before we do move on to defenders. The likes of Alisson and Ederson, are they worth using the money on? I know they're a little bit more expensive. Or actually, on the flip side of that, Az, do you think they could be a little bit more rotation proof during this run-in?
Yeah, but there's not much upside with them. They don't make a huge amount of saves because the defences in front of them are so good. You know, we rarely see Alisson Ederson hitting double digits, although they regularly get the 6 points. I think Alisson is a definite no-go. I think you've got Trent and Robertson and Salah there. You know, you could go for Diaz or Jota. There's plenty of ways. You know, Ian talked about getting yourself locked into these 3 players and not being flexible with your moves. And that's the problem when you go for one of these goalkeepers. It's so hard to take one of these goalkeepers out to free up one of those spots. Ederson is someone that could be considered. I mean, not many of us are going to be rolling with 3 Man City players. You know, the likes of Sterling and De Bruyne are really expensive. You've got Foden there as well. Mahrez gets rotated a lot. So it is defence, I think, where we're looking with City. Diaz is out. You've got Laporte and Stones playing. Cancelo is just the number one target. But a differential could be pairing him with Ederson. It's just, I like the look of Ramsdale and Schmeichel, like Ian was saying. Leicester's fixtures, I know their defensive numbers aren't great, but their fixtures are unbelievable. Once United's out of the way, it's only really Spurs that they've got between now and the end of the season, which looks a real challenge. And they've got all these double game weeks to be rearranged as well. So I'd favour Schmeichel over Ederson, but I don't think he's a terrible choice.
Okay, let's go into defence. And we've already touched upon it a little bit. Let's just start with, unfortunately, another injury in defence to the most owned defender. Trent Alexander-Arnold has a hamstring injury. He's 8.5 million. He is certainly not cheap. Is this another wait and see situation, Ian?
Yeah, I think it has to be. I'm tempted to say that if you're on a wild card, and Trent isn't going to play this first game, that it might be worth not owning him initially, but having a plan, a clear plan to get him back in. Although that is booking in a transfer, isn't it? But I don't know how, if he's going to miss Watford, I don't know how much then you need him for the Manchester City game. Saying that, he could still return in any match, I'm sure. But maybe it's an opportunity to cover him with Robertson and look elsewhere and then swap Robertson out for Trent Alexander-Arnold further on down the line. But if you haven't got a wild card like me, I just wouldn't think about getting rid of him unless he's ruled out long term. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait probably till Jurgen Klopp's next press conference, which won't be for another week yet. So I think it is a wait and see, really, whether you're on a wild card or whether you own him and you haven't got a wild card. I don't think there's any rush whatsoever to be making a decision on a player like that, because when he's fit and when he's in the team, everyone needs him.
What about the other Liverpool defenders then? As Andy Robertson is someone that I remember, Ian, coming on this podcast a few weeks back and waxing lyrical about. He's been in brilliant form. Does this enhance his appeal? Would you be tempted to go for the double up or maybe exchange Trent for Robertson?
Yeah, I think Diaz coming in has made it really tricky to know who to partner with Salah kind of in the midfield. Jota was the kind of go-to option and did well for us really when Salah was out in the end, especially in that kind of Leicester game. But with Diaz back, we're just not sure who's really going to start in there. So I think you want to keep these spots in your team for the best teams, and City and Liverpool are the best teams. And with Liverpool, I think it's quite clear now that Trent, Robertson and Salah are the best three options to have. I mean, Robertson's points returns are just absolutely ridiculous. Since game week 22, he's only blanked once, and that was when he didn't play. So you can't even call that a blank. So in all the matches since game week 22 when he started, he's delivered 6 points or more. And that includes 4 double digit returns. You know, this is a defender. This isn't like a midfielder or a striker. And it's a 7 million defender. You know, he's playing like a 10, 11 million pound player in our squads that you can have for just kind of around the 7 million mark. So I've got him in my side. I'm really happy with him going forward. I really like that double up move. I think Ian's point though about Trent, my first thought, I kind of gasped. And then when you think about it, if you've got that wild card to play, you know, Liverpool have got City and United in game weeks 32 and 33. If you're going to be looking at wildcarding after that, you could potentially look to go without Trent during that period. Maybe get Cancelo, who's got Burnley in that period as well. So it's not completely ridiculous, but Robertson for me is someone that I think everyone should be considering, definitely.
Listeners, of course, can't see it, but I'm making a face because, as I've said, I'm probably going to wildcard. The thought of not having Trent Alexander-Arnold honestly fills me with fear. Ian, we've mentioned Cancelo there, as I said a couple of times about City, their fixtures and the defence. Cancelo is someone that I sold a couple of weeks ago when he missed that game for Manchester City. He's another reason I think I need to wildcard to get him back in. But are we worried a little bit about rotation given all of the competitions that City are in?
Well, yeah, because it's Manchester City, it's Pep Guardiola, and rotation has been the name of the game, hasn't it, over the last few seasons. Cancelo looks, this is going to be replayed to me, isn't it? Cancelo looks rotation proof to me though, because he's been so important to the way that City play. And picking up on a point I mentioned about Burnley as well, City have got so much to play for in the Premier League. Is Guardiola really going to take the risk to rotate one of his best players in a match where the points are going to be absolutely crucial in the Premier League title race? The margin for error for these teams is almost zero considering how good they've been. So I can't see him taking too many risks in his team selection if the title race remains as tight as this. No one in City's team has got a higher points per match score than Cancelo this season either. Incredibly, in second place, it's John Stones. And obviously Stones may be another player who has grown in importance and could be finding his way into our teams over the next few weeks since Ruben Diaz has been ruled out with injury. And Stones' record this season, anyone who saw FPL Daily yesterday can switch off at this point for a moment, but anyone who didn't, Stones this season has made 9 Premier League starts. He's kept 8 clean sheets. And in the entire campaign, when he has started a football match, Manchester City have conceded 1 goal in the Manchester Derby, which was Jadon Sancho's goal a few weeks ago. His record has been brilliant. He started the last 3 in the row in the Premier League as well. He's 5.2 million, so not a bad price point. The only caveat is the fact that Diaz will be back soon-ish. So maybe you'll get a month of John Stones. But yeah, the stats look great for him, certainly.
A very nice stat. Ian did actually tease that on Twitter, saying he was going to save this for the podcast. Not only have you saved it, you've also upgraded it as well. So thanks very much. Excellent preparation there from Ian. Where else are we finding value in defence then, Lars, outside of Liverpool and Manchester City?
Well, I've got Matt Doherty in my team after he sort of claimed... And did he? I mean, I guess he did, he has been playing very well. It's also just a case of Emerson playing himself completely out of contention by being a bit of a disaster. But it does seem to be Doherty's shirt now. And as inconsistent as Spurs has been, they're still, you know, under Antonio Conte, a pretty good team by and large. If you have a wing back, and quite an attacking wing back at that, who plays regularly at 4-8, I think that is a very, very appealing prospect. Just in terms of my strategy as well, building up towards that double game week, I am looking at, again, I don't rate the Leicester City defense at all, but maybe some Southampton defense is where we want to go here. Maybe to try to sneak in some Kyle Walker-Peters or something, seeing as they have a double there, one of them being against Burnley, who are bad. It's really tricky with Burnley because their fixture list is great and they have some pretty, you know, reasonably priced defenders, but you just don't trust them to keep a clean sheet in any game. And really, I don't see how there's enough of a potential attacking upside from their defenders either moving forward. So that's just not very appealing.
We can't really talk about defence without talking about Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea, as Reece James and Antonio Rudiger are going to be the popular ones, of course, depending on Reece James's injury and how long he's going to be out for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Chelsea defence in general just are players I'm really looking at. I mean, you've got Man City and Liverpool top of the kind of defensive numbers for the season, and particularly from January. And then in third is Chelsea. You know, minutes per chance conceded every 11.6 minutes. Liverpool's 11.7 minutes, so it's like just, you know, basically identical. City are sort of far and beyond the best defensive side with 15.5 minutes per chance conceded. But I just really like the look of Chelsea, not just because of that, but just because in midfield it's a bit trickier to know who's gonna start each match. I think there's some good options that we'll probably talk about in a minute, but it's harder. Whereas in defence, I don't think you can really go wrong if you get one of Rudiger or James in. The fixtures are just absolutely ridiculous, really. You've got two games left to be rescheduled in Leicester at home and Leeds away, two very winnable games. They've got Brentford to play, they've got Everton to play, they've got Watford to play, all in the league, so three kind of bottom dwelling teams. The only game which I think looks tough for Chelsea really is that Arsenal home game in game week 33. You could maybe argue United in 37 as well, but I think Chelsea will be confident of winning that. So I just think if James is fit, even if he plays, you know, kind of, I don't know, seven matches and misses three, I still think he's going to be one of the top scoring defenders between now and the end of the season. He's so capable of hitting these really high, you know, double digit points. So if he's fit and available, he's got to be on your side, I think.
On to midfield now. He's had a bit of a niggle, but presuming I don't need to ask about Mo Salah, Lars.
It's not just the fact of what he adds to your team. It's just the consequences of not owning him, because any time he plays, he can just bang in a hat-trick and then, you know, your season is in a very bad way. I think it's too dangerous to go without him, basically. I think the potential downsides of that is too great. So when we're talking about, we get this feeling in FBL sometimes when we're talking about all these like really fun assets and punts we can take. And we're just, if I just moved out Salah, could afford so many things. But it's just not a good idea, I think, at the end of the day. I think that it can hurt, it can come back to haunt you so badly that I'm not moving him.
What other options stand out for you, Az?
Yeah, I think Chelsea, like we've talked about, they're the ones that I'm really looking to tap into. I'm going to keep talking about them. Ian's rubbing his hands because he's got some opinions on the Chelsea mids. I think one of Mount or Havertz for me is just such an important asset going forward. I think if you're wildcarding or thinking about wildcarding like you are, Kelly, I think you really need to be getting in one of those two. I know they've got rotation, and this is what Ian's gonna try and use in his argument, I think. They've got competitions, you know, that they're still in and to play for. I just think I look at the fixtures between now and the end of the season, and you're looking for these top sides, and you're looking for players in form in the top sides, and you've got that with Havertz particularly, playing in that kind of, you know, striker role out of position. So I'm leaning towards Havertz as being someone that I think we should all be looking at. But I'm interested to know how Ian is going to try and dissuade me from that.
What have Ruben Neves, Jordan Henderson and Pierre-Emile Højbjerg got in common?
They're all part of a very strange stat that you're about to drop.
Yeah, they've all got more points this season than Kai Havertz.
Yes, but how have they in the last 4 or 5 weeks when Havertz has been playing regularly under Tuchel in his favoured role?
In the last 2 game weeks, Kai Havertz has got 33 points. He's been absolutely brilliant. No doubt about that whatsoever. But that is essentially 40% of his points for the entire season. And prior to that, playing in the same role in a team who were also winning games, he got 3-5, 1-2, 2-1, 2. I'm just not sold on Havertz at all, if I'm honest. I think he's a brilliant player and I think I could be proved to be completely daft between now and the end of the season. But I've also felt like I've been a little bit daft owning him at previous times as well, because he's someone who looks 1 week amazing and is involved in everything that Chelsea do. And then the next week he's involved, but he's not involved decisively. And he goes long periods without getting points. Rotation's an issue for them as well. The Champions League could well be a priority for them between now and the end of the season in the coming weeks, if it looks like they've secured third spot, which they're on course to do. Mason Mount's another option as well. Of course, he's actually the only Chelsea midfielder who's in the top 21 point scoring midfielders this season. And I know I'm using now season stats, and people are probably saying, well, before you were talking about recent form, like with the Leicester defence and stuff like that. I'm not saying ignore these players altogether. I just think you need to be prepared for maybe a little bit of disappointment if you own Kai Havertz, because that's how it's gone in the past for me, certainly.
Could not disagree more with that.
Perfect. Can I just throw in, if we take away just the names and the form and everything around it, with Kai Havertz, you've got a midfielder who's priced at 7-9, who's playing as a striker regularly, it seems, for the third best team in the country. I think under most circumstances, you would consider bringing that in. The rotation thing, I think, is a real risk, because if you're Chelsea, presumably the Cup and the Champions League is the priority now, because they're going to finish third unless something kind of weird happens. But they just look so much better now with him recently. And it seems like Tuchel's really... There's going to be a real like desire from the point of view of Chelsea to give Lukaku every chance, because they've invested a lot of money in him. But they just look so much better when Havertz is playing in that position. And I really think, yeah, certainly for my planned wild card, I'd be very surprised if I end up not having Havertz in the team for that one.
Okay, a good debate, gents. I enjoyed that very much. I'm not sure I'm any clearer on whether I'm going to bring in Kai Havertz or not.
I think I probably went slightly stronger than I was intending to do, just because the other two boys
comparing
were so...
Comparing to Højbjerg. My God.
He's got more points in the season. Disrespect. They're just stats. They're just stats. That's all.
I tell you what, let's now... Why don't we move on to a couple of teams that don't have European football to focus on? So maybe rotation won't be such an issue. Let's look at Son. 13 goals this season. That's more than any other striker, but the debate recently has been whether he or Dejan Kulusevski are another option. Kulusevski, of course, so much cheaper than Son. Where do you sit on this debate, Az?
I sit very firmly on the side of Kulusevski. I think Son is a fantastic player. Don't get me wrong. He delivers year on year for us in our teams. He reminded all the kind of non-believers against West Ham just what he's capable of, two sort of fantastic goals that he scored. But you've got to remember, this is a 10.9 million asset, and what you've got in terms of Kulusevski is someone who's nearly 5 million cheaper than him and has a very similar minutes per FPL point in his favour. And we've seen from Kulusevski that he's made that kind of right wing spot his own. He doesn't look a stranger to Premier League. He's come in and hit the ground running, and I think you can do so much with the money that you save from that, especially if we're looking at these premium defenders like Robertson and Cancelo and Trent. You need to kind of make sacrifices elsewhere. In a straight out shootout, now in the end of the season, you'd pick Son, but you've got to factor in that price difference between them, which is why I'd say that Kulusevski is the better pick.
Let's look at Arsenal then, because Ian, you've already said you wish you owned Bukayo Saka over Gabriel Martinelli.
Yeah, I don't think there's any need to be clever on that, to be honest. I've not been clever. It's just that I made a choice a while ago that I wanted Martinelli and not Saka. But looking at the stats, Saka's got 5 double-digit returns this season, 9 goals, 6 assists. He's got 8 attacking returns in the last 13 matches. Whereas you compare that to Martinelli, 1 double-digit return this season, 5 goals, 4 assists, which is still okay, to be fair. It's still pretty good. But just 2 attacking returns from the last 10 matches, and then not turning up for that Aston Villa game has burnt me even more. There is a saving. There's a 1.4 million saving currently. 6.7 for Saka compared to 5.3 for Martinelli. But looking at the form over the season. Again, I'm going to do something that has undone my Kai Havertz point a little bit, but I think Saka's the one to get.
Lars, let's look up in Manchester then, because as has highlighted a couple of times, just how good Manchester City's fixtures are. But it's the old question, isn't it? Who on earth do we go for? There are so many options in that Manchester City midfield.
Yeah, and the issue again becomes cost. Without wanting to echo what's previously been said, we're in a situation with our teams now. I think you have to have Salah. I don't think there's a way around that. I think with the overall scarcity of good strikers and the fixture list they have in his form, I think Kane is now very close to someone you kind of have to have as well. And with big defenders being very important assets right now, you just run out of cash. Like, I'd love to be able to squeeze in De Bruyne somehow. I'd love to be able to squeeze in Sterling or even Mahrez. Just financially, I don't see how it works. It might be possible to wiggle in Foden, and given that he's been playing like as a bit of a false nine, I mean, that could be something there. But he hasn't been returning a huge amount of FPL points recently, even though he's been playing very well in terms of like performance and what we, you know. He's a very good player doing good things on a football pitch, but he hasn't actually been returning that many points. So I end up with no City midfielders, I have to say. I end up with really no forward City assets at all, which seems mad given that they're the best team in the country. But, you know, that's where it is.
Let's round off our midfielder chat as with a couple of players who've been popular recently, Rafinha.
Don't sell Rafinha. Not yet.
Okay. Your name's not Az, but go on.
Do sell Rafinha.
No, you can go on. If you're that passionate, Ian.
Don't sell him. Yes, he blanks in 33. Sell him then. The next two matches are Southampton at home and Watford away. Southampton have conceded 12 in the last four games. Watford have conceded 12 in the last five games. His XGI is third amongst midfielders in FPL since Jesse Marsh took over at Leeds, and he was so unlucky in that Norwich game only to get an assist. I've seen a lot of people selling Rafinha or saying to sell Rafinha now. Unless you're on a wild card and you're looking for the rest of the season, if you're planning week to week short term, just don't get rid of him yet. Get rid of him when he blanks in 33.
What do Jack Harrison, Daniel James, and multiple other Leeds players have in common, Ian?
Go on, Az.
They've all got a better minutes per point than Rafinha this season.
Minutes per point. Okay. We're splitting hairs now, aren't we? They've taken more throw-ins as well.
Yeah, probably. The trouble with Rafinha is obviously there's absolutely no doubting his quality. I think he's destined to play for, you know, an absolute elite side. I think he's absolutely incredible. But when you look at his points returns, they're poor. For someone of his quality. I mean, going back to kind of game, I don't think he's had a single double-digit haul all season. He just never gets them. I mean, he got the assist against Norwich kind of in the final sort of minute when they won that game. But you've got to go right back to game week 26 against United for a goal. And then you've got to go back to 22 for an assist. So you're looking at three attacking returns in almost 10 weeks of game weeks. So I'm just not sure that we're going to see him be an FPO asset for us between now and the end of the season, really. The next two fixtures are great, though, I have to say. You know, Southampton at home, then particularly Watford away. But what we've seen with Jesse Marsh is we've seen a much better defensive side of Leeds. Wolves got the red card. Before that, Wolves are in complete control of that game, and that really did turn it on its head. I think with that game in 33, you've got to be looking at an exit door for Rafinha if you've got him. But I do agree with Ian that you could potentially hold him if you've got him until then.
And finally, onto the forwards. It has been slimmer pickings when it comes to this position this year, as my Son stat earlier alluded to. However, there is one man who is jumping out at us. Finish my sentence, Lars.
I think it's time to just say that we kind of... I don't see how you can go without Harry Kane, really. Just because of the situation with the strikers, there's so few good strikers at the moment. It's going to turn into a very long sentence, this, Kelly. there's just so few strikers in the game currently that you look at and say, oh, I need him. And so when Kane looks like he's back to something approaching his best form, Tottenham's fixture list looks pretty decent. They're kind of improving under Conte, I think. It's a lot of money and it squeezes you in other areas of the team, but I think you have to have Harry Kane right now.
Yeah, 7 goals and 4 assists from his last 7 games, 9.43 points per game. So Ian, we know you've got to move heaven and earth to get him in, but what other forwards should we be looking at?
It's a hard sell, isn't it? As he's laughing because I've taken ages to even
because
formulate
because you haven't got
words.
Harry Kane.
Because I'm and thinking that. About how I'm getting Kane in. If he was fit, I've seen a lot of people mentioning Jamie Vardy, but he's not fit. And we're going back to the issue with Leicester of rotation. I saw a stat going around, though, that just sort of tempted me a little bit on the official FPL Twitter account this week, saying that he had the most points per match of all the forwards in the game this season. But he's only scored once since November because of sort of issues with form and fitness. Although he's only had three Premier League appearances during that time. So perhaps he'll come back and be fresh and firing. But then you're looking at priorities then for Leicester as well. Are they going to prioritise Europe? Which means that maybe Vardy's in that side rather than the Premier League side. And there seems to be a trend as well over recent years that Vardy's form comes in the first period of the season and not the second. So last year, he scored two on the final day. But if you take that away, he scored two in the previous 21 matches of the season. So even to add him in, that's four goals in the last 22 matches of the Premier League season last year. And in 1920, he scored six in the last 17 as well. Again, his form came in the first part of the campaign. And he was great at the start of this season for Leicester. Again, maybe the injury absence will mean that he comes back fresh and firing, like I say. So perhaps he's one to look at, but he's expensive. So then who are you going without elsewhere? And I'm not sure. Weghorst, I mentioned earlier as well. There's obviously strikers who are going to double in 33, who you may have your eye on. I'm sort of struggling to make cases for them, but people like Che Adams or Armando Broya, it's a tough sell. Maybe
I've got one.
Go on, Az. Help him out.
I've got the most unlikely hero before us up front between now and the end of the season, and Kelly's going to be very happy with this. Cucho Hernandez is 5 million. He has three goals and one assist in his last three. Only Dennis has got more goals than him now in the league. But what, I mean, I know Watford haven't been great offensively, but I was looking at the Watford fixtures. They have Leeds, Brentford, Everton and Burnley all at home to play.
Have you seen Watford's home form?
Well, that is a problem. But don't you think with Hodgson at the helm, these are games that he's going to be targeting. I think they could do it. I think they could do it. And if they're going to do it, it's going to be Dennis and Cucho that I think are going to be the platform for that. I think at 5 million, when we're looking at, you know, getting expensive defenders and we're looking at all the midfielders, I think Cucho is the one, because I think he's better than the likes of Gelhart and, you know, and I've got Huang in my team of Wolves. I think Cucho is the stand-up pick in that kind of 5.5 and under bracket.
And as, let's be honest, your followers on social media will know, you've not bought into the Armando Broya hype, have you?
I haven't. No, I think, again, a bit like Rafinha, absolutely fantastic player. He's going to go on to do big things, I think, whether that's at Chelsea or if he signs for another club. But I just haven't seen the FPL points from him to make me think that he's this kind of standout pick. He's got the double in 33, which I do quite like. I certainly don't think he's a bad pick. You know, his price is so cheap. But I would honestly, I'd go for Cucho with the 0.5 saving. I think he's going to be the saviour of Watford this season.
Note to producer Sammy, book Az on this podcast every week. That's the kind of positivity I'm here for. Well, that concludes our stock check. Let's go out on a high, shall we? I feel like we've covered off pretty much every player in the game, but hopefully we've helped you decide who you should be bringing in or maybe getting rid for this final run-in. Do remember, though, you can only have 15 players in your squad. Right now, on to transfers and captains. Well, game week 31 may seem a while away, but let's check in with your transfer plans as we won't be hearing from you guys again before the deadline. Come on then, Lars, what are your plans?
So looking at my team, there's an area that's been very much neglected, and that is strikers not named Harry Kane. I've got the other two strikers I've got in my squad here are Broja, who again hasn't returned since sometime in the mid-70s or something. I mean, it's been a long time since he did something. Whereas I've also got Josh King somehow in my team.
Yeah, you've kept that loyalty.
Disgraceful stuff for me. So I need one of these guys. It might be a bit of a sideways move. Maybe the priority will be trying to wiggle in Reece James somehow. But I think I need to address this at some point and have strikers. So I since I didn't fit it in the last section, Jean-Philippe Matessa looks like he has actually nailed down the position up front for Crystal Palace. You know, he started the last couple of games and has scored a couple of goals. And with Palace looking decent and like a pretty vibrant team, they've got a pretty good fixture list coming up. I mean, I'm moving him straight into a home game against Arsenal if I move him in this week, which isn't ideal. But I think as a cheap forward option, he's 5.2 playing up front for a very reasonable looking Palace at the moment. I think he should be a cheap striker option. And maybe as I look to refresh my bench, you know, I can tell Josh King to go away, bring Mateta in and have 0.5 left in the bank from that move. I feel pretty good about that.
For a minute, I thought you were going to keep your Watford loyalty and do King to Cucho, but alas, you don't have the faith in the Hornets. Anyway, Ian, what about you? What are your plans?
I've been stung before.
As it stands, I'm looking at rolling the transfer this week because my 11 looks decent. Also, that then gives me the opportunity next week to perform the major surgery that's needed to rectify a couple of my errors and obviously have the extra transfer in my back pocket. I think Kane is the top priority for me. I think it's absolutely crazy, like I said before, that I don't own him. And maybe I'll just risk one more week without him, which seems to have been my phrase over the last few weeks. And it's not something that's gone very well so far. But when I look at the 11 this week, I just can't justify it. So I'm rolling, I think.
As you rolling, or have you got a move in mind?
I think I'm going to have to move for Havertz this week. I believe so strongly in his club potential between now and the end of the season. I've got the exact money to do Coutinho to Havertz and Hwang to Cucho, who I've also been, for some reason, talking up on this podcast. I didn't think Cucho was going to be my kind of big target between now and the end of the season, I've got to be honest. But yeah, here we are. It's funny how things can change so quickly. What else that does is that frees me up a little bit in 33 to play the bench boost, because I'll be taking out Coutinho and Hwang, both of which don't have a game, and bringing in two players with a game in that week. So the bench boost in 33 is on if I do that move. It means a hit for Cucho, but I think that's probably what I'm going to do to better afford Havertz.
When you've also spoke so passionately about bringing him in on this podcast, you kind of have to bring him in as well.
I'll be very disappointed if Az doesn't bring in Kai Havertz, and I'll be a very interested observer on how that goes.
90% I will.
Ian will be refreshing your team after the deadline. Let's just end very quickly on the captaincy. Is Mo Salah the standout option against Watford, Lars?
Yes.
Simple. Simple for you, Ian?
Yes.
Have we got a full house, Az?
No, yes.
Cucho. Oh, I thought you were going to say Cucho away at Anfield, but you do have
Josh King. Bring him on.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cucho away at Anfield. Well, gents, thank you so much for coming along. It's been a bit of an epic podcast this week, but so much to talk about and so much to help the listeners with when they're planning for these final few weeks of the season. Don't forget, this is an early shout. Your deadline is Saturday, the 2nd of April at 11 a.m. But don't worry, there will also be another podcast before then next Thursday with a more specific Game Week 31 preview in it. If you can't get enough of FPL before then, do head over to fantasy.premierleague.com, where the guys at FPL HQ are keeping the articles coming throughout the break. And finally, if you regularly enjoy this pod and you listen on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if you would be so kind as to consider giving us a positive rating, we would be incredibly grateful to you. Plus, it helps us spread the word and reach more FPL fans. Have a great break, and we'll be back next week.